This episode of the FitCast is brought to you by the PTAdvantage.com, an online personal training solution to help trainers save time and make more money. Hands down, the best resource I've found for distance coaching. Check them out at the PTAdvantage.com. Hello, welcome to episode number 280. I am Kevin Larrabee, and along with me this week is the wonderful and talented and soon-to-be resident of North Korea, Lee Peel. I'm just kidding. Lee, what's up?
It's good. I was just thinking, like, yeah, you know, I don't have, like, a doctor or anything. Maybe I can have a captain.
Captain, yeah, but the kids, I have a couple athletes that call me, that just say, aye, captain, whenever I give coaching instructions.
Dude.
But they're just... You know,
what age range are you normally? I was about to say, what age range are you normally working with?
I have these, and it's real funny. Like, I posted a picture on Facebook yesterday of these, I have like 11, 12, and 13 year olds in this group, and a bunch of them made me birthday cards and said, aww, like, you know, all this sweet stuff, and like cut up one of their art projects and like recycled that into a birthday card. And they're just like, those are the kind of athletes that I want to train. I never care about training professional athletes. Like, these are just really good kids that want to get stronger. They want to perform better. And that's just, if I could just do that the rest of my life and still afford to do all the crazy stuff that I do, like going to Japan, then life is good.
That's so cute.
But we're here to talk to you.
I know. I just wanted to know because I wasn't sure. I never knew what age range you worked with.
Well, it's kind of gone all over the place, but as of like probably the last year.
I didn't know
year,
you worked with kids that young. I didn't know I was that young.
Yeah. And, you know, these are these youngsters are even like hockey players, like 11, 12-year-old female hockey players that are just, you know, looking forward to getting on the ice and trying to hit someone else without getting caught.
That's awesome.
They're pretty funny.
Great. I'm so excited about the new wave of athletes coming in, like over the next like couple of decades, as like especially the girls to get integrated. It's so exciting.
Well, I think the great thing that we've been seeing is that there's so many strong women out there now that are just great examples. Like you look at the USA women's, like the soccer team, the hockey team, they're just prime examples of, you know, what you can be capable of if you want to work hard.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So we have a really jam-packed show. The people really came out in full force to submit questions. So thank you for everyone out there. We're not going to get to every single one, but thank you for submitting those. And obviously, stick around for the off-topic. We did about a 20-minute off-topic discussion where we went into a lot of stuff and even some interesting takes on the fitness industry in general and Facebook and how that stuff can interact sometimes for the good, sometimes for the bad. So that's the facts of life, you know?
Yes.
So
I almost started singing the theme song. We should probably
move on. I never watched it, so we'll have to
move on. Of course you
didn't.
You're a guy. Why would you have watched... Did guys watch The Facts of Life?
I think it was a little bit before my time.
I think it was a little bit estrogen, too.
A little bit. I was watching Double Dare. the first question, let's just get right into it because we got, like, seriously, a ton of questions. Yeah. Question for Mike. I have a question for Lee. How do you recommend people that are severely overweight get started? My wife and I both need to lose 100-plus pounds each. I've gained over 75 pounds in the past 3 months. Excuse me, 3 years alone.
3 years, not 3 months.
That's a Christian Bale thing. Nearly every time we try to lose weight, we will be successful with a healthy diet for a few days or up to a week and then fall off the wagon. I am so overweight that I don't even know where to start with exercise. Any advice would be much appreciated.
I think... Whenever I deal with people that are severely overweight or that just have a long journey ahead of them, the first question I always ask, if we're talking one-on-one, if it's not just answering a question, is, do you really understand how you got there? Because normally people don't understand how you get there. And like, I understand it. It's like, well, obviously overweight. But to me, when you're looking at taking part in such a long journey, you're looking part in changing your life. And that's ultimately what it is that's happening here. You're having to change your life. whatever it is that you're doing, you and your wife, whatever lifestyle it was that you're living, and it may be a very simple lifestyle. You know, oh, we go to work, we come home, maybe we go out to a restaurant, we go eat at Outback, or we go to eat at Chili's, or we order in, we have pizza, this, that, and the other. We sit, we watch TV, we hang out a little bit with our friends every once in a while, and we go to sleep, rinse, repeat. I mean, that is your kind of stereotypical American life, if you will. There's not a, maybe you can throw kids in there and some things change up a little bit. Less time is had for individual purposes or desires. But other than that, like that's kind of, it's kind of a running theme a little bit there is work, it's home, sit, TV, sit, eat, and kind of rinse, repeat. That's what you're dealing with. And, if you don't change something in that variable, it's just going to be impossible, because what usually tries to happen, what people usually do is they try and go, okay, well, now I'm going to go from doing that life to trying to move during the times when I normally sit, and I'm going to try to eat less or completely change the type of eating that I do in a dramatic manner, and I'm going to try and knock this out as quickly as possible. And then they fall back to old habits, or the old habit is the comfortable habit that they always want to shift to. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work because that's not what you want to be doing. It's not what you're comfortable with. And technically, you're not really changing your lifestyle. You're just doing something in your current lifestyle that's now more uncomfortable. And because that's not a lifestyle shift, that's just a habit shift. You're trying to make a habit shift, and it's not even a habit that you're totally embracing. So what I recommend, or what I'd like you to think about, or anyone who's listening to this think about, is look at your life just as a whole and try and understand how you got to that point in the first place and the decisions that you make to get there in the first place, and how you can kind of alter decisions in a manner that is not going to be so overwhelming to you. Like, for example, start with, okay, I'm going to go through my life. I'm going to get up. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to come home. I'm going to sit, and I'm going to do the kind of things that I do. Maybe don't add in exercise. Don't add in anything, and just start shifting to try and eat for the food that you deserve, which honestly, it's not going to be a lot, because for most of us, it isn't, who live that kind of a lifestyle. If you're going to work and then you're coming home and you're sitting and you're hanging out with your wife, and you guys just kind of veg together, and you live a pretty simple sedentary life, you don't get a lot of food for that. Your wife is going to get even less than you will. So you have to take that into account, and you have to choose nutrition properly for that. Not to lose weight, not to try and get the fat off, but just to stop this from happening in the first place. Because if you keep on your path, you know, you're just going to keep gaining weight until you hit that comfortable mark to where you're heavy enough to account for all that food that it is that you're taking in. So that's the first place you really need to start. It's just trying to understand your maintenance, and you can get activity monitors and things like that. And I'm just a big proponent of them. I think that they show a reality to what your lifestyle and situation is, how much you may or may not move. And it'll give you just a little bit of a better picture of what it is you deserve. But activity formulas and calculators and stuff like that online are also a great start if finances do not allot for that kind of thing. But really understand what it is that you need and you deserve, and start with that. Eat the junk, even. Eat the junk, but eat for what it is that you need and deserve, and understand what it is that you deserve, and don't be in denial of that. That way, down the road, when you're sitting and you've had an Outback meal and you've had a dessert and you've had this and you have that, you really know that you don't deserve it, because sometimes people, they try and rationalize with themselves that they do deserve it, or that it can't be that bad, or it can't be that much over. But if you've gained 75 pounds in 3 years, I assure you, you're eating over on a regular basis pretty well. So you really need to understand what it is that's taking place in your day-to-day life eating. Be realistic about it and try to eat at maintenance, even if it's junk. Then try and eat at maintenance, cleaning it up a little bit, throwing some stuff in that you like, adding in, usually it's protein. You know, the easiest place to start is just to kind of add some more protein, because that's what people usually neglect the most. I don't have any problems with carbohydrates. I don't have any problems with fats. Like, that's not an issue. But generally speaking, the SAD diet, the standard American diet, is very carbohydrate and fat heavy and very low on the protein intake. So start with adding the protein and start with making like small changes. And I mean, this might seem boring, but the problem is that if you go online and you're trying to look for some sort of extreme fat loss or P90X or whatever, like some sort of like instant transformation thing, I'm not saying it can't work for you, Mike. It totally could. And if you find something that clicks with you, great. But what I usually find is, and since you say, you know, you'll start off good and then you'll fall off the wagon and you'll just kind of seep back into the deep end. You're trying to put a Band-Aid on a bullet wound and it's not working. So I would instead really assess your life in a like real serious kind of way with what you're doing and then make the kind of small changes. And once you really understand what you need and deserve, then you just start to subtract. And you just get in a deficit as many days as you can be in the deficit. You and your wife try and support each other. Try and do take out meals that are just healthier, you know, do chicken salads instead of doing chicken subs. And it might sound like a really stupid, simplistic answer, but it really makes a difference. If you need convenience, then don't try to fight the convenience yet. If you don't know how to cook or if you don't know how to find these certain kind of quote unquote perfect macronutrient fit ways to do things, then screw that kind of OCD mentality and just do what it is you can do to get to a starting point and then take it to the next level. There's a great article that I put up on my like page. I'm not trying to pimp my like page, but that's just where you can go find it because I don't remember the name of it. But it was about how to get past an okay point that we all set for ourselves. Because we all set this kind of like okay point. We can do something to a point and then we get on autopilot. That's kind of how we work in general. You know, we know how to drive a car. But some people take it to the next level and can do stunt driving or they can do, you know, special tricks or race driving and things like that. But most of us just get to the point where we can just drive an automatic. Maybe you take it to the next level and you can drive a stick and so on and so forth. But we get to our comfortable zones and we can do it without really thinking about it. We can do it sadly while doing other things that we shouldn't be doing. And what you want to do with your deficiting or just your healthy eating or things like that is try to get to the point to where you're just going along and you're now making some like healthier maintenance decisions and you're sticking your calories. That becomes automatic. No more binging, no more like crazy overeating, no more anything like that. It's just automatic that you're going to eat for what you need essentially. Then it becomes automatic that you're going to eat for what you need in a healthy sense. Try and do it like that as much as you can. Yes, you still have some treats and some carbs and some fun and that's fine, but you try and have more of a balance, at least having protein with every meal, stuff like that. Then you decide that you want to lose fat. And you try and go into getting comfortable to a point of being in a deficit, but maybe not so large, you know, just a couple hundred calories here or there. Shave it off. And maybe you finished the day and you didn't quite eat everything that you totally needed and deserved. Maybe it's just 300 calories, but it's a start of restriction that's not so insane and so aggressive. And then you go to the next level of comfortability and next level. And then from there, you just do it as much as you can. And you make sure that since you are your size, by the way, that you have a lot of periods of breaks because you got a long way to travel. So you're going to have periods of deficits and you're going to have periods of breaks and you just need to cycle in between them and bounce back and forth. You do that. And I think that you're going to get there a lot faster. It might not sound sexy, Mike, but I think that it's going to help you a lot more than me being like, well, you need to start restricting carbs because they make your insulin shoot up and that makes you want to eat. So that's probably the problem, Mike. You know, like that's not going to help you. So.
Speaking of like the activity monitors, mm-hmm. a lot of them have popped up over the last probably six months or a year. So yeah. What's the one that you're recommending right now?
I actually just put a link up about this too. Time did a great review. And in my personal opinion, it lined up with almost every single thing that I believed. But hands down, the Fitbits are still the best. They're the best because one, they have like long battery lives. I like the clip model more than the wrist model. I've been testing the wrist models. There are some problems, in my opinion, with the wrist models, particularly when it comes to like low-grade arm movement that accounts for steps versus just low-grade arm movement. Like for someone that plays guitar, really funny to wear the wrist model because all of a sudden you're like, wow, where did 6,000 steps come from? Oh, I was playing guitar. So there's certain things like that you have to keep into account. It really collects that stuff. I like the clip model that you wear on your belt or inside of your bra or what have you. I think that they're just a little bit more tendency to accurate. Still, they have their issues with accuracy, of course, but I like the Fitbits. They have good apps on Android and iPhone. They have good customer support. They're relatively cheap. I think right now they're still at the top level of what I would choose and recommend. I haven't come across. What I'm waiting for is, and there is one that came out that I'm going to be testing, but the reviews on it are kind of eh. What I'm waiting for is one that really duels heart rate monitoring to the best it can with steps, accelerometers, and Traxel, like barometric pressure, things like that. That it does all of it. Yeah, I think I spilled some words there, but I'm tired. Regardless, yeah. So that's the kind of stuff that I would look for when getting it. But I like the Fitbit. Maybe something else will come out.
Yeah, I mean that's what I kind of saw is when Nike and all these other companies had them come out, the reviews tended to be pretty poor, and the Fitbit seemed to be the one that just stood above all still. All right, the next question that we have comes from Linda. My question pertains to a plant-based diet. You would think eating a plant-based diet would eventually eliminate the need to, quote, diet for leanness. However, with regard to bodybuilding and the attention to macros, how important is the protein intake really when it comes to getting lean and preserving muscle mass?
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, got it. Okay, yeah. Plant-based diets do not mean lean. They do not equal. Let's just go ahead and flush that out. I know that a lot of people think that going, and let me caveat this, I'm a vegetarian, so I'm not beating up on my own kind, if you will, but just because you are vegetarian, vegan, whatever, does not mean that you're automatically going to be healthy or lean. I assure you, I know many overweight vegetarians and vegans. So that does not have anything to do. The energy balance is going to be what comes into play there. And while some people do find it easier and more satiating, less problems in general with certain health markers, absolutely, and just overall happy quality of ethical lives for whatever reason it is that you're doing it, it does not equal just I switch to a plant-based diet and all of a sudden everything, wah, magic. It doesn't work like that. So I just want to kind of it's a common thing that bothers me because I see all the time people talking about or throwing up memes or Facebook posts or what have you and be like, oh, well, I'm sick or I wasn't healthy or, you know, my doctor told me this and now I'm going to cut out meat. If you're cutting out meat, unless a doctor has told you specifically, of course, that meat is the problem. So I don't want to overstep any boundaries there. But generally speaking, in the research sense, if you're cutting out meat or if you're cutting out something like that for health reasons, I'd be wary of doing it for that, per se. I would look into why you think that that's okay and the research that's really into doing that because I personally believe, even as a vegetarian, that you're generally going to find a healthier disposition with a balance of animal and plant proteins and just a balance of veg protein, fruit, and things like that in general. So just throwing that out there, just saying. But let's talk about protein requirements for vegetarians or if someone is going to have that kind of a goal and they are a vegetarian. There is a difference between vegetarian and vegan or plant-based diets. When you say that, I'm going to assume not vegan, but I guess I'll just throw it in if that's the case too. For conversational purposes in my book and what I think is a vegetarian, no meat whatsoever, not even fish. For a vegan, no animal byproducts whatsoever. Not even anything like gelatin and things like that. So if you're a vegetarian, you still have the ability to eat dairy and eggs. That's my point. And if you eat dairy and you eat eggs, there really shouldn't be a problem with getting your protein requirements in the first place. And, basically, you kind of guide by the same thing. Now, I think protein requirements by some people's standards are ridiculously high, especially in the bodybuilding community. From our actual need, essential need, we really do find that mostly, you know, we're looking at like kind of 0.8 kilograms body weight standards. I mean, that's what we're looking at. Some like the one. when you're really competitive and you're really knocking it out, can you get us? I mean, is there a problem with going to 1.4? Is there a problem with going to 1.6? Are you going to have kidney failure? No, I don't think that that's an issue. I'm not trying to act as if there's a difference between what we need, what we require, and what may be optimal. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's optimal yet. So anyone talking about what is optimal or throwing out numbers that they know for a fact that 1.6 times, you know, body weight in kilograms or whatnot is optimal or is the number that you have to hit. And if not, all of a sudden you're going to atrophy. We don't know that. So I see people, now we can talk about it in a philosophical sense and we can rant and rave about it, but it's not, we don't know that. We know that there's an essential protein need that we must meet for our amino acids and that generally is very low. I mean, some research could point to it being as low as 0.6, but I think to be on the safe side, and I think that most people will come along and they'll say, yeah, I think if you're talking about just like your essential needs for someone that trains or for someone that's getting up there in age as well, just to make sure to protect muscle wasting and things like that, with 0.8, I think it's a good number to look at. It's a good number to try and shoot for. And that's not a lot. It's really not. A lot of people think that that's a lot of protein, but it really isn't. The times body weight, depending on your size, it can only be somewhere around 60 grams of protein a day. So that's really not that much protein. That's still though a good amount of protein that it is that you can get in, and you should be fine, especially with training. And we also we do create a repair response in the body. We do. There is an essential need and there's a non-essential. So I think what you really want to look at is just making sure that you're getting your bare minimum, and anything that's extra, throw to the pot where you need it. And I think that basically is looked at more so on your performance level. If you're endurance based, or if you're having more endurance, for some people that's going to be a little bit of a higher fat, and for some people it's going to be higher carbohydrates, depending upon how it is they perform. I am more of a carbohydrates person for energy need and intake, but there are some people that do better with their energy intake coming in a little bit more in the fat sense. And so they might put a little bit more towards protein, fat, a little lower towards carbohydrates. You can do this in a plant-based diet. It's still going to all work exactly the same. If you're vegan, it does get a little trickier. It's not bad. It's not like you can't do it. I think it just takes more manipulation. And I think women are going to find it harder to maybe always get the protein intake that they need without using supplemental protein, like mm-hmm. protein powders and things like that. And still being in any sort of caloric deficit that's going to help them achieve lean levels. So what I mean by that is if you're trying to get your optimized protein intake with a plant-based diet, it might be hard if you are very sedentary and you don't move a lot, and your caloric burn overall in a day maybe only hits an 1800 kind of range. Because when you get to bodybuilding and you get low in body fat, you're small. You're a small woman. So you don't burn a lot. And unless you're doing a lot of training, unless you're moving a lot, you're not going to expend a lot. So trying to get in all your protein requirements while hitting a large caloric deficit is not going to be that easy for you, because you have to, everything that you eat comes with another macronutrient. I mean, I'm not trying to be like, duh, really, but you know, your protein's going to come with nuts, or it's going to come with, you know, vegetables. It's going to come with some other macronutrient that usually is going to be high towards that. There are exceptions, of course, like tempeh and soy products, but oh God, soy's evil. But I'm just saying, like, there are exceptions. My point is that it can be a little trickier. You have to be more focused. It's just not as easy. If you're vegetarian and you just start eating eggs and you're fine. It's really not that difficult. And there is supplements and powders and stuff like that too. You can use it, but I guess in a long-winded sense, in a way, I'm kind of saying it really shouldn't be looked at or treated any different than anybody else should. Mm-hmm. Just pay a little bit more attention to your protein intake and make sure that you're getting your essential, which is, you know, by some argument standards, in my personal opinion, I think it's always safe, and research supports somewhere around that 0.8 mark.
Do you find that, you know, there is a much bigger population or a bigger demand for information on this stuff. And a lot more people are tending to go towards that plant-based or, you know, just a vegetarian diet over these last couple of years.
To be a bigger trend. I get asked a lot more questions than I used to about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of it is fleeting. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of books released. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah, I think it's the combination of there's a lot of animal activism going on. Mm-hmm. That there are some people that are opening up more ethically to vegetarian decisions, and then you have like the eco type reasons. You know, people that are maybe they don't really care so much. I don't mean in a negative way. Like they don't care about the animals, but they care about the environment. And then there's people that are trying to do it because they've, you know, maybe like the China study or certain books that they've read, which I do not support, that have come out that talk about that eating animals is bad or that eating animals leads to cancer, things of that nature. So people are trying to cut out eating animals for that reason. I think there's just a lot, there's a shift of so many more reasons in our society and our media and things like that for people not to eat animals is that they investigate it. What I usually find is that unless it is based upon an ethical issue, it doesn't last very long because I think that it's natural. It's very natural to want to eat animals. I think that it's very, it's not easy. It's not convenient to not want to eat animals. It's not socially acceptable still. It's still very much a social taboo. You have to have a very, in my opinion, very strong character to deal with meat eaters if you're a vegetarian. And it's not, you have to very much know yourself and be in supportive of your opinions. It's almost like a religious thing. So I think there is a shift, yes, especially documentaries like Food Inc. and everything else. You know, people are streaming on Netflix left and right, and they'll watch something and be like, oh my God, I had no idea. It's like, really? You didn't realize the slaughter? Yeah, I know, it's shocking. But so, yeah, I think because of that, there's a shift, but I think that it's mostly a fleeting thing. Most people I find that switch to vegetarianism, it's very short term. Or they do veganism, it's very short term. They usually find that they don't feel very good when they do it, or that it's just too difficult for them to do. And I do find it is more popular right now. I wish it was, you know, personally, I wish it was more popular for the reasons that I desire it to be. But I don't try and let my reasonings cloud the health side of things or the nutritional side of things, which I think that it's very hard to ever, in my opinion, find support for just plant-based eating in some sort of optimal sense. We don't know though, so I don't say that either, but just because vegetarian or vegan health measures as a whole versus the SAD diet, a standard American diet, is better. I mean, we can get into that debate, but it does not mean it's superior at all in any way, shape, or form. I think there's still much evidence that would need to be released for me to be convinced that a plant-based diet was more healthy than a diet that had some animal protein in it.
But it's from the earth, man.
Yes, it is. No. I mean, it's hard arguing that point of it's hard arguing that point of view because of where I stand ethically, but it's what it is.
It's Fern Gully. That's a good movie.
Yeah, it is a good movie.
All right, the next question that we have comes from Jason. Lee, I've taken great interest on the psychological and emotional, physiological and emotional reasons behind why people become overweight and stay overweight or lose motivation to finish their plan due to such factors. So my question is, how do you go about coaching someone at that emotional level to be able to change their behaviors in order to follow your nutrition plan per se to 90 or 100% of the instructions and coaching given to them? That's from Jonathan, not Jason, my fault.
Well, this is where we become psychologists and not trainers, you know? And whenever I talk to people, I had a conversation with a friend and I was trying to explain what we do is really funny, I always think, because at least people like us, Kevin, because it's not always so black and white, but I was trying to explain what I do. And she was like, so really you're like a psychiatrist? And I was like, yeah, a little bit. But you're never going to convince someone that they need to do something that they're not going to do. So I know that that's probably like seems like a cop-out answer, but it is, because people can come to you and they can pay you money and it makes them feel like they're doing something, but inside they're not ready to do it. So I think having an eye for who is ready and who is not is really important in our field. And there are obviously times and that are more high, like right now it's after the new year. Everybody wants to change. Everyone has their like New Year's resolution set in, they're shot the gun and they want their fresh start. Nothing wrong with that. But it's everyone gets caught in this excitement and this whim and they start to lose it because they are feeling left out of things that they want to do. They're tired of it. They're hungry. They push too hard, too fast, and they hurt themselves. All of those kind of typical things that take place. From a psychological point, we get overweight, generally speaking, for a multitude of reasons. Everything from how hormones affect our psychological stance to so depression, anxiety, loneliness, relationships, you name it. There's so many reasons, environmental and emotional reasons, that we get to where we are. But mostly it's because we just settle into our lives and we just allow things to just keep happening. And we live in avoidance of what it is that's taking place. So a lot of what we do is we wake people up. Right? That's what we do in general. We wake them up to something. And when you're a trainer, someone comes to you and they say, you know, I'm kind of awake. Some people anyway, the people that I think you're talking about, Jonathan, they kind of say like, I'm kind of awake right now. I kind of see what's going on. I'm a little aware of what's taking place in my life and I'm not happy about it, but you have to understand that I don't really want to change and I'm scared and I'm uncomfortable and I don't like to push myself to points of uncomfortability. And I've had so many bad negative experiences with pushing myself to points of uncomfortability that once I get there, I start to withdraw and I go back to in myself, so on and so forth. And these are the things that they're saying to you without saying it. And what you have to do is you just kind of have to read each individual person and figure out how fast you can move them and what you can demand of them at a time. I think when you're talking about a trainer working with someone, that's how you have to look at it. So if I have someone that comes to me and they're a person that finds things very overwhelming or stressing, like everything is kind of overwhelming and stressing. Going to the store is overwhelming and stressing. Dealing with their mother is overwhelming and stressing. Going and finding the time to work out is overwhelming and stressing. During the workout, they want to talk more than train. Like these, that kind of a hypersensitive person who's just really tender and sensitive to stress. This is not someone that you should be trying to push into like crazy CrossFit workouts and really low calories with like no carbs. And this is not that person. Understand that. And so when you're writing your nutrition plan and when you're writing your training plan, do it in a manner that's going to help them not be so freaked out and stressed out all the time. Do it with in mind of not trying to reach some sort of perfection and to try and impress your other trainer buddies because you have this client that's doing this like really hardcore program that's really restrictive and has all the latest macronutrient manipulations and intermittent fasting and cycles and carb backloading and all that kind of stuff. Like they don't care. They just want to look better. And it's your job to help them feel better and look better. And it doesn't have anything to do with something new that you want to try out or a new toy that you want to play with. And understanding that, I think, is really, really crucial from like a trainer standpoint. So get into their heads as much as you can and be like trying to understand their personality. If there's someone, though, and this is the flip side, if there's someone who really needs like accountability and they really need to be pushed because they want to feel like that someone cares and they want to feel like that someone other than themselves gives a damn about what's going on in their life, then maybe that's the person you can push a little harder. You can try and use that passion and motivation and get them somewhere a little faster and give them a little bit more instantaneous results. Ask more of them and communicate with them on a greater platform rather than just like rep counting and so just stick your calories a day. You know, you've got to really kind of match the person. And sometimes the person's not going to be right for you at all, too. And you have to be open and willing to understand that and be willing to walk away from clients. But you can't be with someone 24 hours a day. If we could, or if it would, then it'd all be Biggest Loser. Because the reason that kind of stuff works, aside from it being, you know, absolutely nuts and driving people into the ground, but in some reasons why it does work so well is because they're taken completely out of their life and you're on them 24 hours a day. And there's been people I've helped like that. For short intermittent periods of time, I have lived with people and they've asked me to, and I've kind of been an in-house keeper, if you will, of what it is they have to do during a short period of time. I've done it, and it's really easy when someone's on your back and you can change like that. It's almost like having a rat in a study that you can just, you give them what they can have. You make them do what they need to do, and then it's done. And it works. It works very, very well. But in the real world, in reality, and when people can't hire you for something like that, you just have to deal with the fact that after the client leaves you, they have to go home with their husband, with the TV, with maybe being lonely, with maybe being sad, with having all these emotional issues and factors that lead to being overweight. You've got to do the best that you can to make it as easy as possible for them, but also motivating them and making sure that they know that someone out there cares, because you'd really be, I mean, I don't think you would be, but you'd be surprised at how many people go through their everyday lives and then just no one's listening and they don't feel like it anyway. Even their husbands, even their kids, whatever, their wives, like they just, they're kind of shut off and they're dead and they feel alone a little bit inside, and they eat to comfort and they watch TV to comfort and they just ignore and they ignore. And you're telling them that that's not okay in a roundabout way too, because you're telling them that they want to change. So you've got to help them during that time, and you've got to help them stay awake because they want to go back to sleep emotionally and they want to go back into where they are. So do the best you can, help them stay awake, help them stay motivated, help them keep their eye on the prize, and don't make it so difficult for them to do that, that they want to sink back in because it's just way too much of a push or makes way too much of a change for them. But yeah, just keep them awake, I think, is one of the best things that we can do. That's what I try and do. I just try and keep people awake and keep them focused.
I kind of talked to Tom about this a little bit too, but do you think this is kind of like where the real, like, this is the thing that we need to figure out?
This is our battle.
Yeah, because personally, this is my, that's always been my problem when it comes to, because, you know, being like a fat kid in high school, you kind of always fall back to those habits or those things that got you there in the first place.
Yeah.
So I still think this is probably the thing that I am most interested about is the psychological aspect of this whole thing, and, you know, why we do what we do, and why, you know, like we had a question earlier, you know, we go 3 or 4 days, then at that third or fourth day, something just like clicks, like our body's just telling us we need something.
Well, you know, there is a physiological point to it. And I mean, oh my God, I could wax about this forever. There's a physiological point to it in that you are depleting and you are switching your mechanisms in your body. You are going into an adaptive state. This is happening. So you have to understand, and I think as a trainer, explaining this to people or trying to get them to understand that there is a physical thing that's taking place. You're not crazy. You're shifting hormones. You're having actual adaptations to a deficit state. You have to, because you cannot lose fat without that happening. And you're on a clock. You're on a pattern. Like even there's a question that I know, I don't know, we'll probably have time to get to, but there's a question that Sally was talking about, where she was talking about, basically Sally wrote in and she said that every serves many days, she's like, okay, well, it's time for the binge to kick in. And, we're on a clock, even if it's not, something that we've done physically in a habit sense, there's a mental clock that we have in which that we have a point in our brains where we go, okay, it's time to shift now. It's time to ditch what I'm doing. It's time to break what it is that I'm doing. And, I don't want to do this anymore. I've hit that point, and now I'm going to go back to eating, or I'm going to binge to make up for what I've already lost. And it's just like horrible rinse repeat cycle. And it's an actual physical thing that takes place. This clock, it's a mental thing that you have created. It's a mental habit. There are hormones that kick into place. There are serotonin shifts. There are dopamine shifts that take place. So there are physical things that are taking place that you literally have to fight, and you have to fight and control at a point in which that your willpower is absolutely at its lowest, because you deplete it more and more and more when you're in a deficit. So you're really asking someone, hey, congratulations, at the absolute worst possible point of your day and life, I'm going to ask you one of the biggest questions and expect you to make a really big decision, and you're totally set up to fail. So, you know, that's what you're doing, and you're doing it day after day after day, and eventually you're going to break. And if you have any sort of automatic cognitive like performance that's set in there, some sort of automatic thought or automatic trigger that kind of kicks in, it's going to switch. And all you can do, all we can ever do when it comes to some sort of bad thing in ourselves, in a sense, like that's bad for our emotions, it's bad for our mindset and the kind of life that we want to live, not necessarily morally or ethically bad, but like what we don't want. All we can do is we can just try and build up our resistance to that and just start to be more and more true to what we can do. And by the way, not set it off so aggressively in the first place, which is where most people get in problems, because they're like, okay, I'm going to be on the wagon. And on the wagon means heavy restriction or heavy training or lots of activity or completely shifting from where it is that they need to be and ramping things up to try and knock this out as fast as they can. It doesn't work. For like 99% of people, it doesn't work. There are some people that can get into that zone. Maybe they get into it once or twice in their life, but they lose it. And once they lose it, it's not going to come back. Not more than likely. So if you find that you're one of those people that just can't knock it out fast and have the amazing transformation moment, because usually those things happen for people that don't even know what the hell's going on. You know, usually when that happens, it's because they've never really experienced it. They don't even know what nutrition and training is. They're complete newbies. They jump in and they get lucky. Most of the time, they just get lucky because they just jump in at the right place at the right time and they get lucky. Most people, they cannot do it. And if you know anything about training and nutrition, you will get in your head and you will spin yourself around and around and convince yourself there are reasons you need to eat and all this kinds of stuff. So you just got to let it go. The quick transformation is just not going to happen for you. So we just do the smart thing and in the long way, the quicker thing, and just start to just nibble at yourself and just take some days where you push the plate away right before you're going to finish it, where you just decrease your caloric intake just a little bit, where you just lift and do what it is you need to do, but maybe you don't quite eat to your full potential all the time. And then some days you do, but you just don't overeat anymore to the point of undoing it. And it starts to like balance out. And maybe that stuff will take 2 years, but it's done once it's done. It may not be sexy, but it happens. And it's just our instant gratification mindset. And oh, America, we're so good at that. And I think, you know, that's our problem. I mean, that is our ultimate problem. When you have someone helping you, it does help, but it's not always the answer. And you'll find ways of even devaluing the person that's helping you or, you know, getting around it in some way, shape, or form. And when that really happens, you're going to run out of people eventually to have help you. So you really need to turn inward and just simply say, okay, what the hell is going on with me? And what do I need to stop doing that's so extreme? Because the extreme thing's not working. And so it's just about being realistic and understanding your life for what it is and not trying to push too hard and trying to work with those hormones and things that are going to happen. And I mean, I don't claim to have all the answers. If I did, I assure you I'd be selling them. But I'm just being funny. But, I think I know enough to know that extreme is not it. And it's our culture, our fitness industry culture is so about that. It's so about extreme. And it's about glorifying it. Even the good ones do it. Even I do it sometimes. I don't mean to. But, you know, we like celebrate this like, wow, look how quick someone did this. And it's like, it's not about the quick. You know, it's not. It's not about the quick. It's really about getting it, because I've seen people, I've helped people do the quick, and they can lose it, and they can lose it bad because they just didn't get it. They just got lucky. They just got lucky and it clicked.
I think that's a perfect place to stop, because Marty's jumping on my back and I think he knows it's about time for him to eat and he's gonna go to my parents' house while I go to work. But maybe we do have some other stuff. Maybe we can punt this away, the rest of the stuff, for maybe like a week or two from now, and then go over the rest of stuff. But I think a lot of people out there that are listening to this I think that was just a really good, you know, 10 minutes of stuff for people to think about and to go back and really meditate on.
Just think about where you're at.
Oh my God. Now he's chewing in a bone.
I can hear like this, like,
he does whenever I'm, he doesn't understand when I'm talking on Skype that I'm not talking to him. He thinks like I'm ready.
He just hears the inflection of your voice and he just gets excited. Huh?
Yeah. Everything revolves around him. So, obviously, you know, before we wrap up, Lee, the best place people can go to check your stuff out is, leepeel.com, but also, you know, you mentioned one thing about like having almost a community or accountability or maybe something else that can help people out. You also have an awesome forum that you're running. I don't know if you could talk a little bit about that.
I do. I have a membership site. It's not very expensive. It's very low, but, I have a membership site and, you can find out more about it at, but you can go to leepeel.com and you can click the Clutch Society members. It's called Clutch Society. And there's a forum for support if need. You get to talk to me, you get to ask me questions, and there's nothing to stop you from becoming a member, taking all the information you can, asking a question, and then running out the door. and that's fine. Some people do that, and some people stay for years. And it just, everyone has different needs, and that's great. But yeah, if you need to ask me questions one-on-one, I do answer questions in there. I personally answer every question that is not directed to somebody else, I answer. So
very cool. Well, you know, again, I think that was a really good place to end. Some stuff for me to think about personally too. Always, you know, again, a lot of us out there who get into the fitness world, and I should say, you know, that's something that people, if you're in the fitness world, really listen to what Lee said, because not everyone's the same. And if you're giving out nutrition advice based on your own experiences and not looking at other people's experiences, you might not be really giving them good advice. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. What works for you does not mean it's going to work for them.
Exactly. Because it's not as easy, you know, for everyone. But thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to go to iTunes. You can submit a review on there. Check out thefitcast.com. Check out leepeel.com. Go to backinmyplay.com. If you like.
Plug. Yeah, you need to get like a shirt that you wear.
I'm trying to get t-shirts made and they look dope. We have a really good logo. But yeah, go to backinmyplay.com. If you like old video games and old 80s and 90s stuff, that's kind of the thing that I'm putting in some of my free time. It's been going really well. It's very high quality, just like the FitCast. So we also have an off topic for about 20 minutes. You can stick around, listen to that. Some more actually really applicable stuff in there. As well as kind of what we're doing outside of work. So, Lee, great to talk to you. We're going to have to definitely hook up in a couple weeks and get Marty fed.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Lee, take care. All right, we're here for something we haven't done in a long time, off-topic discussion for episode number 280. Lee Peel is joining. Lee, what's up?
Oh, my God, 280?
280.
That's where you're at?
Yeah, getting close. I mean, I figure, you know, go to 300, then think about it.
That's insane. I can't believe it's that high. I can't believe how many I've missed.
Well, I think there's... Again, it's one of those weird things where I swear the last probably 10 people I've had on, like Tom Venuto and like Mike Boyle and the people I've had on like a couple times, like, holy shit, really? That many? like, yeah, no, I do it sometimes. Even though I do other stuff, like, you know, have the number 2 retro game podcast on iTunes. So,
is it really?
Yeah, that thing has blown up quite a bit because... luckily, I have some connections in the industry that have helped promote it. So
that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah. And it's fun. You know, sometimes you just got to when you work a lot like we do, sometimes you just need to do something for fun. I like doing this too, but sometimes
It's so much more fun to talk about back in the play. Has to be.
Well, it's just there's less debate. And I mean, you see this, and I think, you know, I've talked about it on the show too, but the kind of I don't know what the best way to put it, but people are more negative, I think, these days about
really
fitness and nutrition and stuff. And it's either like my way or you're an effing idiot. Or
are you talking about arguing on Facebook, Kevin?
Well, yeah. And I think you did the thing where you kind of like you put up like not a wall, but you separated things so you didn't have to read everything just to keep some of that negativity out. And I did the same thing for about 3 or 4 days. Every time I kind of saw something that like, yeah, you know, I mean, this person, they kind of know what they're talking about, but I just don't want to see this because every time they post stuff, it's just like lots of negativity. So you just hide all their stuff. And it's done a great job, and it's made me so I'm not on Facebook very much because I only see like 15 new posts a day. It's been cool.
No, I mean, I switched my account over to where there's just a like page and then there's like my private friends, which not that I won't be friends with like various people that add me, because I will. I mean, as long as you're not a douche, you're not a homophobe, and you're not a crazy negative person, I'm fine. You can add me. Have at it. But ever since I did, the quality of my life has improved dramatically. I think it's causation. I'm just saying. I think that it's a connection, because the things I used to see in my feed just made me crazy. That's why I didn't even look anymore. I just didn't even look. So now it's great because it's just like page, and people can like that if they want to. And if they want to know me, they can know me. That's great. It just sits separate now, though.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you kind of have to, you know, in this field or in whatever field that people are in that's listening to this, sometimes you kind of have to put up with some of that stuff to kind of just make sure that, you know, you're getting along with people and you're growing your own brand and stuff like that. But hopefully people out there get to the point where they can kind of say, you know, I want to just have my own little space, and maybe you should just restart MySpace because you just have that be the setup. That's the thing that I've noticed is just like over this last year, like lots of stuff that has happened has just made me really get lots of negative stuff out of my life. And I think it can make a big deal. And like for people who post like animal cruelty stuff, like I'm all for, you know, stopping animal cruelty. But don't post that stuff. I don't want to see pictures of that when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah, I think there's some things that you should really be careful about what you put so freely in your feed. I mean, you know, I'm very big on animal rights and animal activism, but I don't ever post stuff like that because it's some people, I know that it does work shock. You know, it does work for some people. It does. They'll see things and I'm like, wow, that really actually affected me. But there are some people that it affects in a negative sense to where they will actually turn against a path that they could be going on to help things because they'd like try and shut it out. And they're like, you know what? I don't want to see any of this. I don't want to talk about any of this. I'm just going to turn a complete blind eye. And I think more than not, it has the absolute opposite result that it's trying to have, in my personal opinion. If people want to investigate that and want to know, fine, it's there for them to know. And you can talk about it in written word, and then maybe point to something. Hey, by the way, if you want to see something graphic, you know, please be warned, what you're about to click on is going to be very graphic. But I think just like putting it right there, and I mean, that goes for just kind of anything. I don't like, I've seen like just some, hi, here's a absolutely like gutted or decapitated woman right there on my thing. And I'm like, wow, okay. Haven't even had, there's no amount of caffeine that's in me right now, and I can't handle that I just saw like that. Thanks a lot, you know, so.
Well, it's like the difference between, you know, thinking about what you would say in public and, you know, what you wouldn't. Because people, you know, if you want to get more information, like about the quality of our food ecosystem in America, there's documentaries out there that you can watch where you can see some examples of livestock and stuff like that. But, and, you know, same thing with any kind of, I guess, political view. It's always best to, I don't give a shit about your political view unless you're a close friend or you're voting in my district.
Well, if it's like something that you're talking about one-on-one, but you don't need it thrust it in your face on a Yeah. No, I get it. I'm the same way. I keep to neutral subjects generally. Generally keep to neutral subjects. Occasionally I get a little, but mostly the only thing I get kind of in your face about is human rights issues. Yeah, I will get a little about that, but that's not really, to me, that's, I don't even see that as political. I just see it as common sense, but that's just me.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get started on something like that.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the world is really weird. So let's talk about happier stuff while we have a couple more minutes. Any kind of like media stuff that you've been consuming lately that's really stood out?
Oh, what have I been consuming? I am obsessed right now with...
Keeping in mind to avoid spoilers, obviously we're not going to do anything to people out there to...
The old woman in me is obsessed with Downton Abbey. I have not gotten to see the some people are gonna be like, wow, really? I have not got to see the fourth season. I'm rewatching all of the old seasons right now so that I can start watching the fourth season because I haven't got to watch it yet. So I watched Downton Abbey, which is absolutely ludicrous. I know, but it's a period British drama that just, it gets to me. It's so dramatic for no reason in like every episode, but I love it.
Have you seen Mr. Selfridge?
No, I've never even heard of that.
Oh, this is really good. It's Masterpiece Theater. I think there's 13 episodes. It's right up your alley if that's what you like. It's about an American, the guy who kind of like started the first department stores in America. He brought them over to London and opened up the very first department store there where people could actually, you know, not just have to like ask for stuff that's behind counters, but they could, you know, try things on and touch things that are in the store. And it's Jeremy Piven.
I'm like already sold.
Okay.
If you, anything with him in it.
If you have Amazon Instant Streaming, it's an absolutely fantastic show. Great, great writing. And just everything is pitch perfect for what I would think it would look like in that time period. And it's just... It's really, really good.
Yeah, period drama with Jeremy Piven. That's just like a no brainer.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird because he just does a really good job, and it's not just like a simple show. There's tons of layers to it. Really good characters, and it's obviously, like I said, free on Amazon Prime.
Oh, I will watch it. It's done. 13. That'll probably be done, and like I'll binge it. I'll just binge it.
I think I did it in 2 days during Christmas break. So.
Yeah, I'll binge it.
It was snowing a lot.
Yeah. I just started Breaking Bad, too.
What do you think?
I mean, I like it so far.
Okay.
It's definitely got me intrigued. I can see how it's going to become obsessive when it really gets rolling. Mm-hmm. I can see how it will get that way. But yeah, I started that. So I'm diving into that because I've been told just too many times to watch it to where I was like, fuck, fine, I'll watch it. And so crystal meth and someone dying of a incurable disease, sure, why not?
Yeah, that sounds like a super happy combo.
Yeah, right?
I've not been able to get into it. I tried watching the first two episodes. It just didn't grab me.
It didn't grab you?
No, it's just, again, you know me. I like really dumb stuff, like, dumb happy content. That's what I like.
I know. Yeah, so it's good though so far what I've watched. I've only watched like, I think I'm at like 4 or 5 episodes, so I just started, so I'm doing that. I found a couple new bands. I'm obsessed with Until the Ribbon Breaks. They're new. They just have like an EP out, but there's only like 6 songs that they have done, but I really like it. It's kind of this like alt, it's kind of that new wave of like that alt hip hop.
Is this up my alley?
I don't know. You might like it. If you liked it, you'd like the song called Romeo. If you like it, you would like that song called that one.
All right. I got it searched. It's on SoundCloud. I'll jump on there.
You can check that out. I don't know if it would be your thing, but yeah. So I've been listening to them. I did get the DuckTales remastered for Christmas. Someone gave that to me.
How is it?
It's fun.
It's all right.
It is. It's fun. Now I haven't got to. I haven't got to finish it. I played it like with some friends over. So we played it together. But yeah, it's fun. I mean, you bounce and everything is the same as far as how you move. It's just a different It's just kind of a different board. Some things are almost very similar, like the Amazon jungle part. Thus far, it's all been very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like little hidden places that you like go into, you know, and you find your little treasure chests and stuff. So, yeah, it's fun. It is. It's fun. So I got that. I thought.
Yeah, that's yeah. actually the first. We did like episode zero, but we did for episode one. We did DuckTales on the NES, and that game is still pretty good. It's hard and has good music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think you'd like it.
Yeah, I got to. I haven't played much new stuff lately because when I've had time, I just.
You do your do you focus on the retro, like going back?
Yeah, but I mean, I just kind of find that I don't know if I like the simplicity, but I think the, you know, one thing that I think you should check out at some point if you have a PS3 is The Last of Us. I thought that was really good. But for the most part, I just continue to spend my money on old stuff. Like I spent $300 on a PC Engine Duo R, which is a console that only came out in Japan. Partially, it came out as the TurboGrafx over here. But I, you know, that's something that came out in 1992, but I spent $300 on it for just the console. So that was, that's kind of where I'm putting my cash these days. Yeah. And it's just like, I don't know. I'm a weird person. You know, I'm not normal. So I just like older stuff, and I'm just a very nostalgic person. I don't know why, and I don't know if that's really a good trait for someone to be.
I don't know. I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. Don't fight it. Go with it.
Well, I mean, I haven't. I've allowed it to go into that outlet of the podcast. But the no, I've been doing like lots of stuff with just like streaming, like video games and stuff like that. I've been trying to find a good solid block of my life where I could keep that in there, but still do the things that pay the bills.
And is it working? Are you fitting it?
Yeah. You know, I've been doing, you know, plenty of stuff, and it's fun, and it allows me to get my focus off of work, which I like, but sometimes it's good to just clean the palate a little bit and do some stuff that's not fitness and nutrition and strength and conditioning.
Yeah, I do plenty. That's not that.
Yeah.
You have to.
Well, see, you have your music and stuff like that.
I do. I have my music. I have my music, and then soon I will be having my travels. So I...
North Korea.
That's right. They're going to love me. So yeah, I mean, I don't even... It's funny when you meet people and they know what you do, they think that you want to sit and talk about it all the time. Like, yeah. Oh, so you want to talk about deadlifting? You want to talk about like macronutrients? I'm like, no, not really. Like, what are you watching? What are you listening to? Just what's going on? What's life? I don't really care. I talk about it all day, and I argue with people all day. I'm fine with when I shut it down that I'm not talking about that at all or doing anything with that at all. That's fine by me. So.
Yeah, I think that might be like the next evolution of the conversations that I'm hoping that the fitness industry starts having with each other. It's just something that's a little bit, you know, more along the lines of actually having a conversation and not just saying you're wrong because this says this, and we can't, you know, come to some sort of discussion.
You mean tact and proper debate?
Yeah, and I think the worst thing you could possibly do, and, you know, we're coming back to this, might as well, but the you know, talking about these issues and complex theories and problems on Facebook is not a really good idea because it's not a good platform for it.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it. I think my thing is I've definitely learned over the years how to debate in a more tactful manner. And I really do think that caring about, if you will, your opponent mm-hmm. on some sort of level is important. Mm-hmm. Like most of the times when I'm engaged with someone, my goal is not to be disrespectful. My goal is really to inform of my opinion. And some people can say, well, no one ever changed their opinion on Facebook. And it's like, maybe the person you're arguing with isn't going to change their opinion. Mm-hmm. Maybe their position isn't going to change, or that you two aren't going to come to some sort of middle ground agreement, because I've had my opinion change by talking to someone on Facebook. So mm-hmm. I know it can happen. But the people following along might become informed in a different kind of manner. So I think that you can do it. I just think that you can't be doing it like, well, my wiener is much longer than yours.
Mm.
It just can't be that way. If you do it that way, or if you're doing it in this overly snarky, really higher than thou, over the top kind of high and mighty way, it's just not going to work. Or maybe it will, but I don't like it. And it's tacky. And it's just not my thing. I think that you don't have to be so mean all the time about it. You can be nicer about it, because at some point you were an idiot about something. And I guess I never forget that. I never forget that I was an idiot about something. So as much as
this form history that goes back 7 years of me on menshealth.com, that you can look at the questions, I used my full name on all that stuff and like the JP Fitness forums, but I was asking these questions, you know, learning, and you know, everyone treated me with respect. No one called me an idiot. And if someone did, they got banned.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's just, I can be, I'm not saying I can't be snarky, because I can. And mostly the only time I get that way now is it's just when someone's being so, when they're claiming an expert status and they're influencing people to do things that are just unhealthy for them.
Yeah.
And so that does frustrate me. And I do get kind of like snarky from that. But even that, I try and like wrangle that in a little bit. But if any sort of, I get irritated when people attack laymen, like just your average like dieters who are just harmlessly passing out like, oh, I'm doing this or I'm doing that. Like, they don't know. Leave them alone. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're like an expert, quote unquote, and you're ranting on about something and you're trying to convince people to be afraid of something or to do something, then I kind of understand like the wolves and they attack. And I still think there can be better ways, but I get it. But if someone's just casually or completely to them harmlessly talking about something that they're experiencing, and then, you know, you pounce on them, I don't think that that's really, it's not very helpful. So I don't know. I think it's about tact, and I definitely, I'm personally trying to work on how I debate with people in a more tactful manner. And I found success with it. I mean, I find that for the most part, my debates with people or the conversations I have, we may not always end up agreeing with each other, but we part usually on very mutual, respectful terms. And I just think there's a lot of ego that you got to put aside. And I've learned to bury my ego, mostly because I've had, I don't know. I know I'm not perfect. So I just try and let it be as much as possible. But yeah, anyway.
Well, I think I talked to you in the past about this, but you guys will notice it, you know, sometimes there will be blocks where there's no episodes. There'll be they're like the last 5 weeks. You know, sometimes it's the holiday, sometimes because we got some crazy stuff going on at MBSC. But, you know, other times is, you know, again, you know, these last probably 18 months, I've been really soured on a lot of the stuff that goes on in the fitness industry. And, you know, like I mentioned before, that's why I started to block a lot of that negativity out, because, you know, even if you don't digest all that stuff, you still, you know, start feeling those vibes, and it can kind of pull you down a little bit too. And, you know, you're not like, who am I going to interview this week? You know, who do I want to hear from this week, that it's not going to be the same stuff, or it's going to be agenda driven and things like that. So that's why, I mean, you can see the like the last couple of people that I've talked to on the show, is they're really just people I wanted to talk to.
Yeah.
So I emailed them and say, hey, do you want to talk for 45 minutes? Like it's always great to talk to Tom Venuto. Like that is a guy that anytime you always make that noise. I was like Tom Venuto.
I love Tom.
So it's like, if I can talk to that guy for 45 minutes, you know, once a week, I'd do it. Dan John, same thing. Like these are just guys that I enjoy talking to. So, it's why those have been the people that have been on, recently. So, yeah, but anyways, you know, thanks for continuing to stay subscribed, and you still hopefully downloaded this.
Yeah, I think they are.
Cool. Anything else before we wrap up? And
no, we could rant forever. You probably should ask questions now.
Yeah, let's do that. All right. Thanks for listening. And yeah, Mr. Selfridge.
I will watch it. Yes.
Great. And don't forget, if you guys like video games, check out backofmyplay.com. There's lots of videos and great podcasts on there. Number 2 ranked on iTunes. Lots of great 5-star reviews.
Plug.